This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. You're listening to The Showrunner, a podcast about podcasting that will teach you how to take your show from good to great. Ready? When you listen back to old episodes that you've done, either like when you're editing them or just listening to them, do you ever, especially interview episodes, you ever have moments where you think, man, I should have asked a follow-up question there? Like you didn't think about it in the moment, so you didn't ask, but then you're listening back to it, and it's like, man, I missed an opportunity for a good follow-up question. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes, many times, and so I've stopped listening to them.
Well, I ask you this because it happened to me in our last episode, and I was editing it up last night, and you said something, and I realized there has to be this whole great story there, and I don't know why, but I didn't ask you a follow-up question. So you told us in the last episode about how your daughter started a podcast and how you helped her out with it, and every single time I've listened back to it, I found myself wanting a little more background, a little more backstory on that. So how did that come about, and what were kind of the goals, and how did it all end up?
We met Pat Flynn last year and John Lee Dumas actually at a small conference in the Philippines, and my daughter was with me. And she started a blog on our trip. We were on a trip for, I think, just over 2 months. And she started a blog. She was blogging. And so it kind of got around the conference. And people started talking to her about her blog and these funny stories she was writing. And John Lee Dumas wanted to, like, started talking to her, but you should really podcast. You should podcast. And I had never even thought of that. And then Pat came over one point. We were eating lunch and he came over and like sat with us and he's like, Sadie, if you really want to start a podcast, tell your dad, he'll email me when you get home and I will buy you all the gear to get you going. Which is amazing, right?
That's awesome. Yeah.
I know. That's what I said. And so we did. And this is actually the gear I'm talking through. So we got home and then a couple of months later and she worked out kind of what she wanted, the branding of it. And we went through the whole process right from the beginning. We named it. We came up with a really awesome format that she could come up with. She did a weekly show. She did 16 episodes, I believe. She got like, I think she's already broke 10,000 downloads, which is amazing.
Wow, really?
Yeah, she's still, she hasn't actually done it now in a couple, I think 2 months it's been. She stopped. She kind of ran out of what she wanted to do with that show, but she still gets, I think, around 1,500 downloads a month from it, which is amazing. And then, but she's already working on like another show. But yeah, that show was called Between Two Worlds. And she was 9 years old when she did it. And it was about, she reads voraciously. So she did about a book. She kind of tore apart a book quickly and kind of made it fun for kids. And then she did like this format of the joke store. And it's so adorable. And I did editing for it myself. And so there's all these sound effects. And then actually there was this band we saw. We drove to Chicago last year to see this band called Cuckoo Kangaroo, who my daughter fell in love with. And she actually just emailed them and asked, was like, I'm starting this podcast and I would love like to be able to use like some of your music. And so they got back to her. We jumped on Skype. She told them all about it. And they actually wrote her all these different songs. They sent us like 8 different tiny little snippet tracks. Like she talked about like the joke store and all these different transitions she was going to do. And they did all of it for her. It was amazing.
Wow.
So
that's really cool. All right, that's even better than I imagined that it was.
It's amazing. It blew me away the whole time, and it was amazing. I mean, I can never thank Pat enough for doing that for her, and then for me, obviously, and helping, and then just the way she did it, and she followed the steps, and it worked super well for her, and she was kind of blown away by it, and really kind of daunted, obviously, but like She was looking at first when there was like 10 people downloading it and 15, she was cool with that. But then it was like, wow, you did like 300 downloads today. And she kind of stopped looking like she didn't want to. But she still gets emails from like young kids and stuff. And
wow.
It's adorable.
What a great story. You know, we might have to have her on here for an interview. and get the full story from her.
She'd love it.
That, wow, that is great. Okay, good. I'm glad I asked you that then. that's
me
really
too,
cool.
Actually. I love the story. It makes me happy.
Yeah, what a great, great story. Okay, well, there will be more. There will be more to this story. That's great. Okay, well, let's move on to the topic of this episode. Which is why most podcasts never go anywhere. And obviously, you know, a big part of what we're trying to do here with The Showrunner is teach you how to run an effective podcast. So whether you already have one, whether you're getting ready to start one. But the reality is that a lot of podcasts don't go anywhere. They get started, they stop, and we want to kind of talk about some common reasons why that happens. So In your mind, John, what are kind of the biggest reasons why a podcast doesn't go anywhere?
The biggest reasons? I would say that there's the four big reasons mm-hmm. that I see, and I've just seen hundreds of people now trying to do it. And the first one would be no USP, then just lacking a voice, mm-hmm. failing to launch, neglecting what New and Noteworthy can do for you in iTunes, and then being inconsistent, which I have mentioned before.
Okay, so which is really five, and those first two kind of go together. So let's break those down. So let's start with no USP, which that's very similar to what we talked about in the last episode. But kind of break down the importance of that and why not having one can lead to disaster for your podcast.
First off, I like how casually you said that's actually five, because I have on the list 1, 2, 2, 3, 4. That was a good cover up. I like that. So no USP. So this is entering a market, whatever your market happens to be, and go to the big market. Don't niche down too far at this point. Go to the bigger market, but voraciously listen to and consume the top 10 podcasts in that market. And there's always giant gaps, either between personalities of hosts, style of podcast, format of podcast, what it is they're doing and where they fit into that market. I don't care what market you're in, there's gaps in that market, and you need to uniquely fit into one of those gaps. That, if you cannot do that, you're not going to, all the rest of the steps that we give you are kind of not going to help you at all. It doesn't matter how well you launch. If you don't have that unique positioning in the market, I don't think you will succeed.
And why not? I mean, because you will blend in and you won't stand out and there won't be any reason for people to take notice of you. And as more and more podcasts come out, like we explained on the last episode, it will continue to be a bigger and bigger problem of having some hook to get people just to listen. Because you're right. If you don't have that, then none of the rest of what we're going to talk about matters. So that's why we wanted to bring this part back up again. So let's go on to number two then, which originally, you know, we kind of had these together, but I think it's important that we kind of unpacked them to talk about each one of them individually. So talk about, I mean, obviously it's pretty obvious why your podcast can't be boring. And just because you have a USP doesn't mean your podcast won't be boring. I mean, we have tried to have our USP here with The Showrunner, but if we're boring and if we're not that interested in the topic, the show's going to be boring, which also goes along with having, you know, hosts really finding their voice and having unique voice. So explain the importance of that.
I think to not be boring is not so much making jokes and all that. It's mostly about, I guess, just being real, being kind of congruent with yourself and sort of exposing a different part of yourself to people in a way that's real. And obviously, like when we say finding your voice isn't positioning of a microphone. It's not that sort of thing. It's really just being and talking about things that you are truly, really into. Don't go into a market because you think there's lots of money in it if you're not into that market. There's lots of money in golfing, but I couldn't just go in and pretend to be passionate or even know anything about golf, so it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And you have to find that, and you have to know that, and you have to be willing to open up and say some stuff and talk about your stuff, your own, like you, in certain ways. that's to me what finding your unique voice is. And that's what resonates. You're in people's ears, like either in earbuds or in their car. It's a very intimate sort of relationship. And if you're just putting on just some sort of fake sort of idea of yourself, because you're trying to be like somebody else in the market, then it's going to show, and instantly people aren't going to be able to engage with you on any real level.
Yeah, I mean, the connection that is possible through a podcast is why podcasts are so exciting, why you and I get so enthusiastic about them. And this idea, it's about being authentic. I mean, people want you. That's why they listen. And I think if you're not yourself, and if you don't reveal, again, authenticity is not revealing everything about yourself. It's about revealing the parts of yourself that are relevant to an audience. And so obviously the things that I reveal here on The Showrunner are going to be different from what I would reveal if I was doing a podcast about relationships. You know, like my relationship isn't that pertinent to here, but what I've done as a podcaster, my history, my experiences, the things I'm confident in, my insecurities, all of those things are relevant here, and that authenticity is very important. And I think the idea here is why podcasts don't go anywhere. So I think you could probably, if you're just good behind a microphone, you could probably pick out any topic and for 5 or 6 episodes fool people and talk about something on kind of a surface level and get away with it. But to go somewhere, to build a relationship and build a podcast that has a loyal audience for 10, 20, 50, 100 episodes, there's got to be a depth there. And I think it's not just a depth of understanding, but a depth of authenticity to how you bring the information to your audience that's so, so important. Because number one, it will keep you motivated. And number two, it will keep your audience listening. And then those two things just feed on each other. And that's what helps your podcast actually go somewhere instead of not going anywhere. So, 1 and 2. Done. Now let's talk about failing to launch, which is interesting because, you know, I think when I first read this on your notes, failing to launch, it's like, well, you know, we're talking about why podcasts don't go anywhere. So the podcast has clearly started, but you're not just talking about getting episodes out there. You're talking about actually having a strategic plan for it to succeed, right?
Yeah, that's the key part, is for it to succeed. I think most people think about launching as getting that approval message from iTunes that you're now available to millions of people who might never find out about you. And there's a lot more to it. I mean, the way I have it is there's a 12-step plan to it that I can't go through here because we're trying to keep this under 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very essential. It's a lead up to actually getting onto iTunes, and then it follows through to that first 8 weeks, which is very, very, very important. And the one thing I do want to mention about, even if you don't want to follow a 12-step sort of plan to launch, the one key thing that I see people making the biggest mistake of, which we did with Showrunner for different various reasons, but we failed to launch with 3 shows on day one. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, every time I see somebody do that, people with big audiences already and people with no audiences, I'm always thinking to myself, I'm going to be shocked if this show really takes off the way it should, because launching with 3 shows, I've talked to so many people, I've done so much research in it, and I've tried it myself with different amounts of shows. And the one show I've launched with 3 episodes on day one was Hack the Entrepreneur, and it's gotten me here. So that is something that's very, very key. So before you launch, make sure you have at least 10 episodes done. I had 22 done in the can, completely done. And I had, I think, almost 10 interviews still that I could have edited into shows if I needed to. And day one was 3. And then I didn't even follow a schedule right after that. I just started throwing out, like I told you earlier, I think I did 6 episodes 1 week during that first 8 weeks, just because the momentum really builds in iTunes, and it's very based on how many downloads you can get. And like, they're checking, their algorithms are checking how many people are downloading how many episodes. So it just makes sense that if on day one people find you and they can download 3 episodes as compared to just 1 episode that week, that's 3 times as many downloads, which the algorithm sees as three times as good. Therefore, they push you way up to the top. And it just, that's how you totally kind of kill it in iTunes.
You had 22 episodes done before you put out your first three?
Yeah, I recorded my first episode. It was the third week of July, and I launched September 5th. And all I did was record episodes because wow. I had 10 episodes at that point that I was not going to use because I hadn't really figured out my questioning yet. Mm-hmm. I had 22 done and edited, and I had just over 10 other interviews already done. I was going for it, man. I was just, yeah. I was like, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it right, and I'm going to see if this works the way I think it did.
Wow.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
See, now here's my fear with that. My fear would be you get all these episodes done before you launch, and you don't necessarily get any audience feedback maybe after the first three episodes that you could then go back and use to inform the other episodes. So, I mean, did you feel like you missed out on that? Did you have kind of a small focus group that you sent episodes to so you could still get some feedback before you put all these episodes in the can? Because my fear would be that I would launch, the audience would respond in a certain way, and then I'm like, man, I've got 22 episodes that are already done to put out. I can't really go back and change this yet.
Smart. So my process started back with Pat Flynn back in March. Mm-hmm. That was my whole thinking. Then I devoured business and entrepreneurial interview podcasts like you wouldn't believe. Then in early July, I literally stopped listening to them until January of this year. I did not listen to another podcast. It didn't matter to me. I knew where I needed to fit into the market, and I created a podcast that fit in, that was completely the show that I wanted and I knew would fit into this market. And I boldly went with what I thought worked. When I say the 10 episodes that didn't get released, because I did have 8 people that I really trust that know podcasts, that listen to podcasts and are into these types of podcasts, and I gave them out to them. I got feedback on questions I was asking, how it was being done, because I'd never interviewed anybody in my life at this point, ever. And this is all just flying. And then from there, I felt like I had a solid base of questions. I knew I wanted it tight formatted. I knew I wanted to have that hack that came later after those 10 episodes. And I literally just put my head down, and I didn't care about feedback that soon, because I think if it's too soon and you're taking feedback, everybody's going to give you all different ideas once you put it out there. And I just had to stick to what I really felt I had planned out and made to work. Mm-hmm. And I was confident that it would work if I just kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it in that way. And it did. It totally, totally worked. There's obviously the person here and they're like, oh, you should make them twice as long. You don't talk enough. There's not enough banter. It's like, really? That's not what I'm trying to do. But I appreciate your feedback. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to all of a sudden make the show an hour long. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was, that's why I say you have to really devour the content of the market you're trying to enter and see what's there and see what you want to do. Then you're educated. If you are not educated making that decision, then yeah, you have to kind of be wishy-washy and not sure. And you kind of need to listen to too many people. But it's like anything. You've really got to confidently go in at some point and just be like, okay, I know what I need to know. Turn off the podcast, not listening anymore because I don't want to get changed. I don't want to get distracted. I'm going to create an amazing show now myself, and I'm going to launch it to the world as hard as I can in the exact way that I think will work. And I said to myself that, and I've said this before on the show, that I was giving it 3 months. And at 3 months, mm-hmm. depending on where it was, I was going to redirect it or change it and take all the feedback then and kind of wrap it into a new sort of plan. But I wasn't going to change until then because I thought it was too soon. And I think it is for some people. They don't give it enough time to get traction and to... And to me, myself, I mean, you listen to my first episodes to some of the later ones. I really, myself, I sorted it out. Even though I stuck to the same format, I was more confident in it and I could figure it out. And I took time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, great.
Does that make sense? I don't know.
Great. No, great answer. Again, I'm glad I asked that question because that
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah.
I think it's essential.
And you mentioned launching with 3-show minimum, and obviously we didn't do that with Showrunner. Now, when we launched Rainmaker FM, we were very careful to do that with all of the new shows that we had. You know, make sure that there are 3 episodes that go out. for the very reason that you mentioned. And with Showrunner, there were a few different circumstances and developing in concert with this course and everything to where we didn't do that. And plus, really wanting to be transparent with this show as it's developed, really kind of let you peek in. So we'll see. I mean, there's a chance that Showrunner may not do as well over these first 8 weeks as it could have if we had done that. So, you know, we both recognize that, but just want to explain why, in that sense, we didn't necessarily do exactly what we're kind of coaching everybody to do, but it's definitely the proven, smarter formula for how to do it. So let's go on. And the reason why is because of that new and noteworthy in iTunes. And so you've talked a little bit about the importance of that. Let's talk a little more about new and noteworthy, why you don't want to neglect it, and specifically the importance of SEO for the iTunes search.
Sure. So new and noteworthy, just in case you don't know, is from the day your podcast is launched in iTunes, they give you 8 weeks with all, when you go to iTunes on your computer, all the stuff at the very top is new and noteworthy. Those shows were launched within the past 8 weeks, and you get obviously amazing amount of exposure to millions of people. So if you can move your way up to that top, then you can get exposed. And that's where you build audience. That's when you don't have an audience and you come from nobody knowing you to 50 or 60 or 70 or 100,000 people downloading you, because they all come through there. And please do not underestimate this. So iTunes SEO is descriptions, show names, and I guess your artwork at the same time. But you'll notice if you go out of new and noteworthy now and go down to like the top 10 shows in your market, go through them all and read their descriptions. Most of them will be very robust and will be full of search engine optimization. iTunes is, whether you want to believe it or not, is just a massive search engine. It's a bigger search engine than Google for podcasts. It's the biggest. iTunes is the biggest search engine for podcasts in the world. And if you don't treat it that way, I think you're missing out massively. That little bar or place to input in the top right corner of iTunes is the search place where people type in words for things of interest. When they discover podcasts, and then they're like, whoa, I didn't even know what these are. And they type in marketing or online marketing, in the top 10, Hack the Entrepreneur now comes up because I've optimized it. And those people now discover me. And people discovering you in iTunes is what moves you up the rankings, is what gets you downloads, and is what builds you this audience. So it's kind of a complicated process. There's a lot to the SEO of iTunes, but please, you can look it up, and there's ways to make sure to optimize that and don't neglect it, because it's a massive, massive opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, and I learned this with the Assembly Call, my IU postgame show. Originally, the title in iTunes was The Assembly Call, which, of course, doesn't say anything about Indiana basketball. And I would search, just to see where it came up, I'd search for Indiana basketball on iTunes, and nothing's coming up. And I'm thinking, well, there aren't that many shows about Indiana basketball. It should at least come up somewhere. And just making a title change to The Assembly Call IU postgame show and podcast, now it started coming up. So it's really, in a lot of ways, it's not that complicated to do. It's just something that you want to be cognizant of and think about so that you can take full advantage. And then I know you also had a tip that you wanted to give about rating and reviews also.
Ratings and reviews are the most important thing to getting you rankings early on in New and Noteworthy and getting you pushed up iTunes. And I don't like seeing people neglect that. So what is it? The president, when it's an election time, he goes first and he votes for himself. You're allowed to do that. So please, I don't want to see your show launch and you not even take the time to go leave yourself a rating and review, because you're later on going to be asking your audience to do this. And if you're not even willing to do it for your own show, then come on. And me, I knew the absolute power of it, and people neglect it. And you only have 8 weeks. So you have to push this from day one. You can create a list of people that you know with iPhones or with iTunes accounts, which most of us have at this point, and get those people. Have an email you can send to them, or literally go to their house. If your mom has an iPhone, seriously, pick up your mom's iPhone, go to iTunes, look for your show, and put in a rating and review. It doesn't matter really so much what the rating or the review says. That's not the point. It's not the people who read your reviews. It's an algorithmic-based thing in iTunes that the more of these reviews and ratings happening on your show during those 8 weeks, the more you get pushed up and noticed and new and noteworthy. I used to sit, I'd like go out for drinks with friends, and every phone of every person sitting on the table, I would grab and leave a rating and review. Then they see you doing it, then they're like, oh, I'll do that. You've been asking me. And then they will. They'll do it, and you'll watch them, and they'll put in a real rating and review of your show. Those things help. They help so much. And I think it's a failure of just people don't understand, or else they're shy to ask people to do it. But you seriously, you'll stop being shy when you start getting 1,000 downloads a day, and then 2,000 and 3,000. You'll just be like, wow, this is so worth it. And I can't emphasize it enough, because it's just screw all that being humble and holding that stuff back. Like, just go for it and ask for ratings and reviews from everybody you know, and then make it on your show, make that call to action at the end for all of your listeners to please, please take 2 minutes to leave you a rating and a review, because it works.
So just as a public service, if you don't want John breaking into your house and taking your phone and leaving a review, I'll just ask. I mean, if you've enjoyed what you've heard here on the Showrunner so far, we would definitely love for you to leave us a rating or review. Obviously, we're still in that new and noteworthy time period, so it would help. And I think, you know, John, I mean, you make a really good point. I think ideally, of course, you have a show that has a great USP, where you have an authentic voice and you're doing a lot of these things right. So you have your iTunes SEO in place so that people who are looking for a podcast about your topic are finding it, and you're giving good value, and they're leaving ratings, and they want to leave a rating or a review. And sometimes you just have to remind people. I mean, sometimes people don't think, oh, I can go leave a rating or review. That has happened to me so many times, where I like a show and I podcast and I ask people for ratings or reviews, and sometimes I forget to leave them on podcasts I like, and I'll be listening and someone will say, hey, you know, will you leave a rating or review? And I'll go do it right then. So a lot of times it's just reminding people who already want to rate you and review you to go do it, and just giving them that little nudge. So, you know, and again, if you don't want to be sitting at dinner and then look for your phone and it's not there, and then this guy in a hoodie is over there, you know, putting a rating or review in, then just go to the Showrunner page, leave us a rating or review.
But they're so important.
And John will leave your phone alone, I promise. Okay, now let's go to the last one. So we've talked about having unique selling proposition and being authentic and making sure that you launch properly. And then now the last one, and then, of course, paying attention to new and noteworthy. And now the last one, which is consistency. You've got to be consistent. And when you're not, that can lead to a lot of failure for podcasts.
Yes, this is, I think, just a not realizing how much work it's going to be. New and noteworthy is always fun. It's always exciting, because whether you make it to the top or not, you still do get more exposure than you do afterwards. So you get more downloads. And people can usually push through that first 8 weeks. And then, as Seth Godin says, you hit the dip. Mm-hmm. And every single person hits the dip, and the dip is hard. Trust me, the dip went on for 2.5 months for me, and it was hard. You drop, I mean, you go from number 10 in your category to number 200, it's hard. It's a hard slug, but you have to continue to be consistent. You say your show is going to be out Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. Your show has to come out Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, because your subscribers that are there and your audience that is there expects it. And they have too many options for you to just decide you don't want to put out a show today, or to not make your show as good as it should be today because, oh, you're not getting the downloads, or you're not getting the new and noteworthy anymore. That has nothing to do with anyone, except you have to work through that dip, because on the other side of it, it's amazing things. And that's where most people don't get to. They stop within that 3 to 4 month period, and shows just fade away. Go through iTunes and look at people's lists of shows released, and you'll see that first 8 week, well, all these shows, and then whoa, they kind of stopped.
Yeah.
And you just can't. You got to push through, but expect that dip. It's coming after new and noteworthy, but there's ways to still ensure some growth after, and to make it so it's bearable, but know that it's coming, and be consistent the way you say you're going to be consistent, because it's imperative to do that for your audience.
Yeah. And one note that I have on this is most people who have podcasts who have podcasted have some podcasts in their past that fell victim to the dip. I mean, if you search my name in iTunes, you'll find some that, you know, they're out there for a few episodes and, you know, or even 10, 15, 20 episodes, and they stop. And I know that there have been times that's happened, and then I've thought, well, maybe I'm just not cut out for podcasting. But that's not true. Just because, you know, you choose an idea and you go at it and it doesn't quite work, that just means that you and that idea and that audience weren't the right fit at that time. And it doesn't mean that you couldn't relaunch that podcast and get it going. It doesn't mean that you couldn't find a new idea and get it going. But it's important. That's what you're looking for. That's kind of that holy grail, is to get that combination of a topic and an audience that you are passionate enough about that when you get to that dip, that you move through it. And if you falter a little bit in the past, it's okay. Get back up. Try it again, because chances are you'll be much better prepared for the next time. I mean, John, you know, we led off the episode talking about your daughter, and she, I think you said she did 16 episodes and it kind of stopped. Certainly, yeah, that shouldn't discourage her. I mean, that's her first time with a podcast. She faced what a lot of us faced, and who knows, maybe she'll pick that up again. Maybe she'll start something else. But, you know, it did. I think she's actually a good example where that podcast went somewhere. Now, if it doesn't go anywhere else, I suppose you could look at it as a failure, but it was a great learning tool for her, and hopefully it'll put her in a better position in the future. But it does kind of illustrate that will happen with podcasts, and the ones that really last have that consistency, understand the workload necessary, and when they get to that dip, they find a way to power through it.
Well said.
So, normally now, because we are done with this topic, we would end. But we actually have a special bonus section of this latest episode of The Showrunner that if people like, we'll continue doing. And so we'll get to that in just 1 second. Before we do that, I do just want to make note real quick of something with the course. And we've alluded to the course in this episode. You know, for instance, your 12-step launch plan, which we talked about, one of those elements, launching with a 3-show minimum. That entire plan will be inside of the Showrunner podcasting course. And so I just want to let people know that the way to find out information and to get in on the pilot program for the Showrunner podcasting course is to go to showrunner.fm, and there's a form right there where you can enter your email address. And when we launch, we are going to launch to the wait list only. And so there will be a special price. It'll be a one-time price. It'll be as low as it ever is going to be. And it will go out just to the wait list. And so then anybody who gets in on the course at that time, you will, you know, it's a one-time price. And then all of the future updates that are to come, you will get them. And especially those people who are in early, John, like we were talking about before the show started, we're going to be doing some webinars and some Q&As where you get access to us. So you don't just have to ask general questions. You can ask specific questions about your show. We'll help you. And we're going to be doing that early on. So, you know, there's definitely incentive to hop on that early on. But you do that by going to showrunner.fm and getting on that wait list. And then once you're on there, we will be able to send you updates and keep you apprised of when the course will be coming out and when it is time to get on it. So, a few thoughts about the course. And now, let's end with a listener question. And if this goes well and if people like it, then we will start taking a listener question every week. And you can ask us questions. You can shoot them to us on Twitter, showrunner.fm. You can send them to us on Twitter also, Jared Morris and John Naster as well. But the first question that we have is from Chris K. Tatum on Twitter, and he asks, are there any other formats besides interviewing authorities, discussing topics with a co-host, or having a highly produced NPR-style show? And the answer is most definitely yes. And in fact, you may see this as a topic for an entire episode, because we could really go into this, but there are a lot of different formats that you can use. For example, Damian Farnworth, who does Rough Draft for Rainmaker FM, he has a monologue, and it's a daily monologue where it's just him talking. You can do a curated Q&A. So Pamela Wilson, who runs Hit Publish for Rainmaker FM, she sends out one question to 3 or 4 different people in the company and then gets them to record an answer and then curates those together into an episode. So she'll ask, what's then your number one SEO tip? And 4 different people answer. She'll put it all together into one episode. You also have a live event roundtable to a podcast like the Assembly Call, which we've talked about. And then the idea is just to get creative, right? You can do a game show style podcast. You can do, you can read posts, right? Like Robert Bruce is going to be coming out with a new show on Rainmaker FM called Allegorical, where these old kind of allegory type posts that he did on Copyblogger, he's going to just read them. And so maybe people miss reading those posts on Copyblogger. Now they get a chance to listen to them as a podcast. He also does unusually short stories, which if you've never listened to, I highly recommend that you go check out because those are great. But those are just some kind of off the top of my head. What other ones do you have? Some other formats for Chris, John?
The two I have that I really, really enjoy are Ask Pat, which is very simple Q&A. He takes questions via audio and he answers one question per show, which is probably really good for what answers the questions of your audience. And plus it posts it to your blog with those exact questions, which is probably good for SEO. If I'm not an SEO guy, but I would imagine a consistent daily show going out like that would be. And then another show of a listener of mine, actually, he asked me lots of questions leading up to his show going out, is called Really Good Reads by a guy named Sam. And he just takes blog posts, or he did my emails, I think, in his second episode, and he took two of my emails and he reads them out and then kind of gives his two cents on it. And that's his whole show. Mm-hmm. He gets me to promote it. He did one for Sonia Simone, I think, was on his show yesterday. Mm-hmm. And he did a Copyblogger post. It's, to me, that's being super creative. It's him by himself. He's really good at production, so he makes it sound awesome. And it's just him reading other people's content that they've created. Yeah. So it's really being creative and thinking of so many different ways. While you're watching TV shows, think of things you could put into podcasting. It's all that. Anytime you listen to radio or other shows, think of things you can kind of meld together. It's as these things come out, it's always seems so obvious after, like, oh yeah, of course, read other people's stuff. That makes sense. And I'm sure so many shows will follow this now, but you really just have to be creative at this point, and you can come up with, there's infinite amounts of shows that can come out.
Yeah, and being creative, putting yourself out there in that way, doing something new can be a little bit scary, but it can also have huge, huge rewards. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, feel empowered to put something new out there. As far as, again, you can ask us questions on Twitter. Also, if you want to leave a question as a review on iTunes, we will give special treatment, priority to those questions, and you can also leave them as a comment on any showrunner post. So those are the ways to keep in touch. And nice. If you like this, we'll keep doing it.
Yeah, excellent. And if you can leave a question on iTunes or even a review on iTunes, drop your Twitter name in there, your handle, @, because otherwise we have no way of knowing who you actually are. iTunes doesn't let us.
Right.
They just show us your iTunes name, but we have no way to access you. But we'd love to reach out and thank you.
Yep, absolutely. All right, John, it's been fun again. We will talk next Wednesday. I hope you have a good rest of your week, and I hope everybody out there listening does as well.
Awesome. Take care.
Yep, you too.